Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Then he told me the price, and I was like, well, you know, I didn't let on to him, but I was like in my head straight away, that works. So that was pretty much the way it was. It was just making those relationships and effectively getting a good deal off the back of that.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyron Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with award-winning Property Investor of the Year, Sam Gordon. With a track record of 20 properties under the age of 30, we hear about another spectacular find, where he bought a 4-unit block for next to nothing. He tells us how he renovated the units on a budget, and how he made a jaw-dropping amount of equity after they were revalued. Gordon sourced an awesome deal where he ultimately paid around $12,000 for 4 units. But how on earth did he manage to find it? And what were his motivations when researching the area?
This deal, I was really looking for something that I could force some value on it, refinance out to my capital, try and refinance all my capital out of the deal to keep moving forward, but also retain a good positive cash flow. So at the time I was accumulating some deals like this, it was really important for me to kind of have that structure that I could keep moving forward and keep, you know, adding those different things into the portfolio. So yeah, that was the main kind of precursor for going out and sourcing this one.
But how did he come across it? Let's unpack it.
I was chasing a location that would provide this sort of strategy for me, right? So I was kind of researching a lot of different areas right around the country, trying to find really strong regional towns. I was setting a minimum 10,000 people population, but had good economies there as well, right? I'm not talking mining towns. I'm talking good, strong regional towns. 10,000 is a minimum, you know, aiming for 20,000 plus. And I was also, yeah, looking for to be either near kind of like maybe like a lifestyle location, like near beaches, or in a good, you know, like a robust area, robust industries in it as well as having good affordable housing that I could pick up, that I knew I could force additional value and retain that positive cash flow, which at the time in my portfolio I was nearing the end where I was looking at, kind of pulling out of work and essentially retiring. And so it was the last few couple of deals like this is really what I was aiming for to kind of, you know, make the most out of the situation.
Yeah. Just curious, you mentioned that you're trying to find, I guess, regional towns that sort of also have potentially a beach kind of lifestyle. I mean, a lot of those kind of places nowadays are quite high, you know, because it's got, you know, by the beach and so forth, and people, especially baby boomers, move towards there. What kind of price range did you kind of set yourself? Because it's quite easy to just, you know, go as far as up to, you know, a few million dollars to, you know, maybe starting off with $200K. Like, did you also set a budget in place as well?
Yeah, I was pretty much looking for areas that kind of had a more of a median house price in the lower echelon, kind of around that 300,000 to 400,000. I thought if I could find the, you know, somewhere that had a median house price in the 300s, I could more than likely source myself a good unit block that had all those prospects that I was looking for, where units were around about that kind of around that 150 a pop. That's kind of where I was kind of looking, and then obviously trying to find something that was maybe a little more run down that had the ability to be titled, just pretty much just working it from there.
Okay, how long did it take you to get to that stage to be able to find that? Because there's so many suburbs, so many towns. You know, you could have spent a whole year searching.
It took me a fair while. I think I was probably looking for about, for those ones, I think to find the location, it took me about 3 months to find the actual location that stacked up. And then what I always do, and I've done this for a very, very long time, is I really research into the area. And so I know the area actually back to front, not just find a deal that I think is good and pull the trigger on it. I like to really do the research into the area to make sure, for one, that I know the actual pricing of property back to front so that I don't make a mistake. And for two, to make sure that all my figures are dead accurate and that the market's moving in the right direction and definitely not, you know, trending backwards.
Yeah. And did you pick a specific state or you just went, okay, I'm going to stick with where close to I am at this point in time?
I was state, you know, Australia-wide. I wasn't being kind of state dependent. I was kind of rooting for those towns that had the, funnily enough, I Googled 100, top 100 population cities in Australia, or, you know, cities, towns in Australia or whatever. And I just worked up kind of from that, around about that 10,000 population up to, I think I was working even up to about 150,000 people, because there's some big regional cities, you know, up in Queensland have some, you know, really strong populations that have good unit block potentials as well. But yeah, this one in particular, it was just, I was just kind of searching, sourcing, and it really just fell perfectly within all the kind of criteria I'd set for myself.
Yeah. So what I probably would like to know, and I'm sure listeners would also like to find out, is how did you come across setting up this kind of criteria? Because 10,000 seems like a random number, right? I mean, I could have said 5,000.
So there's a couple of things that come into the equation. So 5,000 or less, and majority of banks won't lend to you. Unless you're a principal place of residence in that area, a lot of the time the banks won't lend to you. You know, if you can show a good stable job in a small town, a bank will, you know, like the big mainstream lenders will lend to you in a location like that. But for investment purposes, anything less than 5,000, majority of the time they're not going to lend to you. And then stepping it up, because I was going to going up to four, I was looking at four properties plus. I was also at the back end of my portfolio. I had to look at commercial funding. So for me, for commercial funding, the people that were going to actually lend to me were, they had a minimum criteria of 10,000 people population. But on top of that as well, for me, a 10,000 plus population is a pretty strong town. It's normally a pretty robust. They've normally got more than one industry and they're ticking along pretty well. So there's that dynamic there where, for one, a lot of the time the housing markets, especially from a rental perspective, are actually quite tight because no big developer is going to be going out there, you know, chopping up, you know, 500 block estates when there's a population of 10,000 people. You know, might be 2,000 houses there as it is. So there's no risk of that oversupply from that front, from all the research that I was doing showing at that. So I just set it as like a good safe minimum to work within that would still work around my strategy. But the town I ended up picking had around about the, it was kind of around about the 30,000 people anyway. So it was bigger than what my minimum criteria was.
That's great. And it would have, I would make an assumption here, it'd have all the majors like, you know, Bunnings, McDonald's, you know, Woolworths, Coles, all those big chain out there that start to get to that point. Because then, you know, once they actually have those out there, they've obviously spent a lot of money to be able to do their own research to, you know, invest in town, because they're not going to go and set up one of these large major chains and start their distribution networks, or just for, you know, maybe a 5,000 population town. And I know a few places that I've been to regionally, it's growing because you know that they're actually popping up new petrol stations, new hardware stores, all those kind of things, because there's, you know, a lot of demand for people moving into it. So that's really fascinating to be able to hear all that side of things. And that's kind of like the criteria behind this one. I'm really interested in the crux of this story now. Like, how did this one come across? Did you actually have an agent call you back, or did you actually just go in and go, oh, actually, I see the one, I'm going to go and search for it? Like, how did you find this particular deal now?
The funny thing was, what I did was, when I was coming time to find this deal, I actually picked, there was four locations that I'd sourced around Australia that worked. And pretty much I jumped in the ute one day and I took a week off. I was kind of coming to the end of work at this job, and I had a bit of leave locked up. So I took a week off because I was fair drive. Drove to each of these towns and inspected all the blocks at the time. And I also asked for any off markets or anything they're working on, anything they think that might be coming up. And I went and just inspected everything that I could, and really just built those relationships with people. It's funny as well when you go out to some of these regional towns, like some of the guys, like you go and inspect one property and they're like, oh mate, you drove so far, come on, I'm going to take you out to lunch. And they like take you out to lunch, and you go have a 2-hour lunch with this fellow and become best mates with him by the end. And it was just funny, man, like these different opportunities and different things that popped up off the basis of just going and doing this trip. And so the one that I ended up buying wasn't on market. So it was, I went in and inspected in this particular town. There was a few different blocks, there was a little three pack and a five pack that I was very close on, but they just weren't quite there. They were very close, but they weren't quite there on pricing. I was probably about 10,000 per unit off from where I needed to be, was where the seller still was. And then one of those agents called me about 2 weeks later and he goes, mate, I think I've got one that'll work for you. He goes, it needs a little bit of work, but he told me the price. And I was like, well, I didn't let on to him, but I was like in my head straight away, that works. So that was pretty much the way it was. It was just, making those relationships and effectively getting a good deal off the back of that.
Yeah, it's fascinating because you never know. It doesn't matter if you just go and look at the particular deal that you set your sights on, but in the end, you end up taking a left turn and then finding another deal somewhere else. And if you don't do those things, you never actually end up being, you know, at that point in time, because I guess it's all about networking, especially when you have a 2-hour lunch with someone. I'm pretty sure you learn quite a lot from them. You know, just like that other episode we just did, you're talking to the neighbor and the neighbor end up coming back to you about your development. You find out so much.
It is, mate. It's very interesting. It's funny, you know, and the good thing about it is they let on so much too. Like they love talking about their town and what's going on, you know, what's good, what's bad. And you honestly do learn so much from little things like that happening. So it's definitely a good way to kind of work it.
That's fascinating. It's amazing. So this agent that came back and said, look, you know, I've got a 4-pack here. Initially you said, okay, the numbers worked in your head. What was this particular deal? Are you able to sort of just share with us how much it was that was on the market for? What was the reason why the vendor was selling as well?
Yeah, it was a divorcee sale. So he was the same owner as the 5-pack. That's why the agent was getting the access to this 4-pack as well. It was the same owner and he was going through a divorce. And so it was coming to the end of the divorce and they were selling off all the assets that they had essentially acquired over the marriage. But this one needed a little bit of work. Two of the units were fine, and then the other two, could have used a tidy up, and the other one was pretty much the same woman had lived in there for like 18 years. Like the thing definitely needed work. So pretty much brought that to me, when he brought it to me, he was talking 400. He was talking around about 400. And then I think we just did a bit of toing and froing for quite a while, and we ended up settling on I think it was 364 in the end as a pot, which was 91K per unit.
Wow, that's a nice discount of what, almost 10%.
Well, the perfect thing was as well, he was rating, like, and put it in perspective, normally unrenovated blocks in this area were selling for per unit 110 to kind of 125, depending on the size, for a 2-bedder. Now, the beauty of this block was that the front three were all 2-bedders and the rear one was this big 3-bedder with a joined garage, like full garage and big backyard and stuff. So it was almost like a house on the rear one. That was really cool to kind of pick that one up in the mix as well.
That's fantastic. I'm curious now, with these type of units, because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking of, you know, 2-bedroom unit in Sydney. You know, it's got quite modern amenities and so forth. And even if we go to like the more rundown kind of ones, you know, the solid brick ones going back in what, 1960s, 1970s kind of build. What can you sort of describe what these units look like when you first saw them?
They were literally like probably what you're thinking of, like a 1960s, 70s, low set brick units. That's honestly what they looked like. Very, very basic. They were all original. So when you walked in, all the carpets were literally like 50-year-old carpets, which was crazy. And it was a good selling point because he'd updated his other ones, but he'd left these ones as is. And it was a good, selling point for me in terms of negotiation wise, because I wanted to go and renovate them anyway. And I was like, mate, I was looking for ones that were already done. You know, like I didn't want to have to, you know, I wanted to at least sit here for a year. These things need work now. And it was a good opportunity to be able to really work hard on that price in exchange for something that I was going to be doing anyway. So, externally, mate, just kind of a low set. They were more of a for want of a better description, kind of like a yellow rather than like a red brick or anything like that. But they were actually pretty tidy little blocks. They look pretty good. Probably realistically, they probably more are villas because they're just low sets. They got little courtyards out the back, all of them. The rear one had that big backyard. They're pretty tidy, mate. Like when we, like my one of my best mates and I, we went down and renovated them. And when we did, we slept in we slept in one of them for the whole week. We just slept on the floor, so it was all right, man. Like could have been worse.
How long was the drive for you down? Like as you said, you hopped in and you drove down. How long does it take you to get down to a location like this?
So when we drove to that one, we left, I think we left at, it was a 14 hours of driving. So we left at like 4 a.m. and got there pretty late in the night after, obviously, we had to make a couple of stops on the way down. But yeah, she was a pretty lengthy drive, that one.
So we're talking about regional New South Wales here, right?
Yeah, I can't give you too much, mate. Come on, buyer's agent. I can't give you all my secrets location-wise.
I'm just curious because that's the thing. It's like to search for these kind of deals, they're sort of hidden, you know, like a little gem in the rough. And in order to find it, you got to search quite deep. It's like, you know, trying to find a needle in a haystack and you don't know where it's going to come out of the blue.
Yeah, definitely. Mate, it's honestly so true. There's so many funny stories around this deal as well, like just different people that were involved and the old building and pest inspector. Like, we ended up crashing out at his place one night because he invited us over for dinner. Like, it was just crazy stuff, man. It was good, but it was good fun.
Oh, awesome. Well, let's delve into the stories. I'd love to hear. So now that you found the property, you started negotiating, there was a lot of back to and forth. So what happened at the end? They end up selling for $364. The owners gave you, was it like an extended settlement, normal settlement? Like, what happened there?
Because they were already tenanted and he was trying to wrap these up pretty quickly for his divorce settlement, we ended up paying, we paid the $91 per unit. Now, the beauty of these ones, so these ones compared to, say, his other 5-pack that he had, these 4 were already individually titled. So his intentions all along was to individually title them and then to renovate them and sell them off. Yeah. And so to kind of, it's not a, like normally they cost about $5,000 per unit to kind of title. But to have these ones already titled was a massive bonus. You honestly, you almost never find it.
Coming up after the break, we learn about another great deal which came off the back of this one.
They weren't titled, but they were in a better part of town, like already in pretty good nick, like not too bad at all.
We discussed the renovation requirements for the 4-unit block.
The very first thing we had to do was those kitchens were literally falling apart. So I brought the sledgehammer in and belted those ones out.
We learned how profitable the deal really was in the end.
It really did cost me just about nothing to walk away from those things, pull all that capital. And was funnily enough able to roll it into the next one as well.
And that's next. Stay tuned. I'm Tarun Sharp and you're listening to Property Investory. Are you interested in finding great deals like Sam Gordon does? If the answer is yes, then let Sam help you find them. Since he does this all day, every day. I've asked Sam to offer a free 30-minute strategy session to help you put together an actionable property plan to help you build your portfolio just like him. To get your free strategy session, simply text 0499881040 and quote APS. Welcome back. Having bought the 4-unit block previously, Sam was offered another deal at a lower price per unit by the same seller.
Mate, I did consider them and I bought them about 6 months later when he absolutely had to. So he sat there and then he ended up pulling them off and he was going to try and buy the wife out from doing them and then she screwed him over for something else. And then the agent came back to me. This was literally about 6 months later and he goes, what about those other ones? You still want them? And they were in pretty good nick. Like they didn't need the work. And I ended up buying them for $88,000 a unit. They weren't titled, but they were in a better part of town, like already in pretty good nick. Like not too bad at all. Yeah, I paid $88,000 a unit for those ones as well. Because I knew they stacked up so well too. Because when I'd renovated mine, so my 2 were already renting quite well that I had, but then when I renovated the other 2, and for a lot more than I thought they were going to. So yeah, it was really not that hard a decision when he came back and offered me the other ones as well.
Yeah, especially when they're cheaper as well. You're thinking, that's a no-brainer.
It's a funny old deal, man.
I guess that's what happens when you've got a motivated seller. You can actually negotiate, and then once you've done a deal already with them, you know, it's more than likely they'll come back because there's no other buyers in the market by the sounds of it, especially when it stacks up so well.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting time, right? Like, there's always different things going on in the market. And when I picked those ones up, that was last year when there was all that election stuff going on and he couldn't sell them, man. He was trying to pull $125 a unit. When he couldn't get them, he pulled them off. And then, yeah, he had the thing, you know, happen with his wife where she tried to shaft him right at the end and he just had to cut him. And unfortunately for him, but I guess fortunately for me, I was the right man in the right place and had the funds ready to kind of pick it up as well.
I guess that's what happens when you've got a motivated seller. You can actually negotiate and then once you've done a deal already with them, you know, it's more than likely I'll come back because there's no other buyers in the market by the sounds of it, especially when it stacks up so well.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting time, right? Like, there's always different things going on in the market. And when I picked those ones up, that was last year when there was all that election stuff going on and he couldn't sell them, man. He was trying to pull 125 a unit. When he couldn't get them, he pulled them off. And then, yeah, he had the thing, you know, happen with his wife where she tried to shaft him right at the end and he just had to cut him. And, unfortunately for him, but I guess fortunately for me, I was the right man in the right place and had the funds ready to kind of pick it up as well. So,
yeah, ouch for him and great thing for you. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's it.
So, let's break down this deal. I'm really, really curious about how it stacked up so well. Now, you've said that's 90,000 or 91,000 per unit. Okay.
Yep.
It's already, most of it's done, except that there was probably two that you had to renovate. So what did you do to the unit to actually bring it up?
The very first thing we had to do was those kitchens were literally falling apart. So I brought the sledgehammer in and belted those ones out.
Nice. I would have been having so much fun doing that too.
Yeah, it was. It was good, man. It was good. It was good fun, actually. I hadn't belted a kitchen for a while, so it was pretty good to take one out. We ripped both kitchens out. We ended up doing all of them. We did the other two at a later point when we came down. With the first two that we did, we pulled those kitchens out. We put brand new kitchens in. We were able to do them. We did those for about $1,200 a kitchen. The stove was already in there. It was an upright stove. That was fine. We could leave that in there. We literally covered it up with a big drop sheet and didn't have to touch that. Fully ripped out the other kitchen and put new kitchen in. And I'm not talking like just like one tiny little parcel here. Like we had a full section where the sink and everything is, wall hung on top of that. And then another one, like almost like a little island one in the middle, kind of out in the living dining sort of area as well. So pretty decent little kitchens on that side of thing.
That is not a small, nice kitchen. You're even giving them island. An island costs in at least a grand or so too.
Oh man, it's just shopping around hard, right?
Yeah, you really did shop around hard. Especially in a town of, 30,000, there would have been some substantial, I guess, supplies there. You know, did you have your Bunnings there and all that to get that? Or did you have to order stuff in specifically?
No, Bunnings was there, man. Bunnings was there. It was everything that we really needed was definitely available there. And we could, the good thing was we were able to price shop different people for different items that we did need. From local suppliers, we were able to price shop them back against, you know, places like Bunnings and Mitre 10 and all the rest of it as well. So on that side of things, it was pretty good. And I guess going back to your question before, we'd ripped that out. We did the kitchen, ripped up all the flooring and relaid all that as well. Bathrooms didn't need too extensive a makeover. All the tiles and pretty much everything was still in pretty good nick. The only thing that really needed replacing was, didn't even need it, but it aesthetically made it look a lot better, was just replacing the vanity, which really is like $150-$200 with taps and, you know, a good little vanity in there. About $200 on that side of things. And then just new AC units. So the two that we were renovating at the time when we were down there didn't have AC units, and then the other two did, and they were fine, they were working. I've always found in certain locations, pretty much everywhere, right? It's if you can have a good little split system reverse cycle, you're always going to pull a little bit more rent. People are always going to be happier to rent there and stay longer, and you can write it off too. So yeah, we put little split systems in each one of those as well.
Yeah, it makes absolute sense. What about the carpet?
The carpet? the carpet was pretty bad. So we had a couple of trips to the tip with that one. Get rid of all that. It was the thickest stuff, man. It was like this orange. It was like an inch thick. This stuff was massive.
No wonder it stayed there for 50 years because it must have just kept piling on layer and layer of dirt.
It was funny stuff. We ripped that out and we linoed the living dining kitchen area, that whole full section in there, and we actually ran that way through into the laundry, which was like a runoff section through that as well. And then just recarpeted the bedrooms and just with like good, cheap, dark carpet there. And it came up trumps.
Did you need to do any painting?
Oh yeah. Yes. Yes. We painted. You just brought back the worst memory of my life. Other than the toilet in the other house that we discussed last time was the roof. The roof in that front unit that the chick had been in for like 18 years, it was just peeling. I've never been in a house before a unit renovated we had to scrape the entire roof because it was just peeling. And then we'd, so all the big open sections you could peel off, like it would just peel off really easy in these big, huge clumps. And then these other bits were just stuck, but they're all like flaky and just looked terrible. So it literally, we lost about a day scraping that roof. Like we were, put this in perspective as well, Tyrone, we did these two units in 7 days, fully top to toe renovation. Each unit was supposed to be 3 days. And then that we lost a day having to scrape that one roof. We weren't happy at the end of that day.
I'd say the same thing. Gosh, you should have just hired another handyman to come out and do the hard labor.
Yeah, seriously. Well, at the end of it, we were just like, we were wrecked at the end of that day. But yeah, sorry. And then a full internal repaint as well, which was obviously, it just makes the place look so much better when you just add, it's just that one touch. It honestly makes such a big difference. And a couple of other little handyman stuff we had to do. Like there was a few sagging ceilings. We just lifted them up, screwed them back, lifted the gyprock back up, screwed it back in the battens, and just all things, you know, little things like that. Just to, you know, aesthetically tidy it back up and make it really good for a reval, really, for to rent and reval. So
yeah. So you managed to have tenants out of there, or you when you purchased that place, they didn't have any tenants in those two units at the back?
I had one in the front. So the old lady that had been in the front for all that time, she was vacating, and she was, I think she might have been losing it a little bit up top, and I think they were moving her into a nursing home. And the guys that were right out the back, yeah, I think we just made it a condition of the lease. They were just a bit, it was just a bit grubby, and it was the big one, and I wanted to do it first. And they were the only guys on a periodic, whereas the other two in the middle, they were on fixed leases with still a couple of months on them. So it just made sense to kind of kick those guys out and get that one done while we're down there.
So you managed to renovate the two, and then the other two already had existing tenants in there, and they just stayed there while you're doing the renovations?
Yep. And then when we went back down, it was actually the time that, so when I went back down and bought the other one 6 months later, took our old mate with me, and we knocked out the other two in the middle at the same time.
I'm wondering by then, would he have said, no, I'm not doing it again, Sam. I'm not doing that peeling again, man. If you get me to that roof again, I'm not coming with you.
He literally said, he goes, if that roof stuff, we're, as exactly as you said before, he goes, we're paying a handyman or we're leaving it. He goes, I'm not touching it.
I would have said that to you straight away first. I'm a good go.
Nah, it was all good, man. By the time we're finished, we're pretty happy with how they all came up.
I should have actually asked you, did you take photos before and after as well for those units?
Yeah, we did especially on the front one. On the front one, if you go on my, I'll send you through some photos, but if any of the listeners want to check it out, if you go on my my Instagram page of Australian Property Scout, I've actually got the before and after photos of that job, including there's a fair bit of the scraping of the roof. I think you can see, like, it's just littered. Honestly, it looks like confetti all over the ground. It's nuts.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll go ahead and check it out myself as well. Could there have been actually other ways, just off the topic, could we have actually used maybe like a high pressure gun or got some kind of special chemical to just, you know, let it peel off rather than scrape it all off? Was that possible?
I haven't even looked into that side of things. I didn't want to disappoint myself by finding an easier option. Nah. If I ever ran into it again, I'd definitely look if there was any way to do it. But I guess the problem with a pressure washer is that it was gyprock. So like it probably could have, you know, punched holes in that, or, you know, that would have done damage. You don't really want to wet gyprock, you know, too much. But I'm not sure about the other side of things. But yeah, what the problem was, once I'd started, I thought it would just be the bits that were all flaky. I thought we'd be able to scrape them off, you know, seal over the existing bits of paint there to kind of blend it in and then repaint it. But once we started, it just didn't stop.
Well, so you're saying this was the internal you're talking about, the ceiling you're talking about?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, the ceiling.
I thought you were talking about the external roof. Okay, so let's talk about the result of it. You spent, you know, a good, say, a week, 7 days, which is phenomenal. It's like you just got in there. It's like a full block renovation or so, probably not even that. And you only had two guys instead of like a team of 20.
One thing I love to do when I do jobs like this is on anything like my mate that came with me, he's a laborer, right? Like he doesn't have any sort of kind of trade skills. He hasn't done anywhere near as many renos as I have. So when it comes time to do tricky things like, you know, fitting, or even cutting out the bench tops and fitting the sinks in, putting the kitchens into place, all the different stuff that I needed, like a second body to do that was knowledgeable on that side of things to knock it out quickly. I think that's a big thing. Those sorts of jobs, it was like the toilet that we spoke about last time, right? Like I literally wasted like over half a day on something that I just should have just outsourced from the very start. And it honestly taught me, that, you know, previous project of when there's things you need to outsource and get some experienced hands in there with you, if you get them to come in and help you, you absolutely smash it out. So both units, what I did was I had my handyman come in. He did about over the week, he would have done maybe 4 half days. I was paying him a bit of cash on the side, getting him in for a pretty good rate. And we essentially just smashed all the stuff out that I needed him for to help me out with. We just smashed all that out. In kind of 4 hour blocks. And then we do all the labor work. And then when he'd come in, he and I would smash out all the tricky stuff. And it's honestly, we got it down to a really down pat system that, by the time we came down the second time, I just did exactly the same thing.
That's so good. And I think that comes with your experience and your knowledge as well. And plus, you know, quite handy as well. So it makes it a lot easier to get in and do it. So at the end of the day, the first two units that you renovated, how much time or how much did it cost you overall? And how much kind of return did you get back on that?
Yeah, so we paid $91 per unit for those ones walking in. And we renovated both of them for just under $5,000 per unit. That was included, yeah, refloor, kitchen, just a little like split system, you know, $1,300 system, whatever it was, and the handyman over like kind of like 2 half days for what he did. Yeah, we did it, but each unit was just under $5,000. So all up, like even with stamps, I think all up, yeah, with stamps, it was sub 100,000 to do each of those units, as we did all four of them.
Wow, that is phenomenal. I mean, even to do a renovation, I don't think I could even pull off $5,000. I mean, I just recently spent $30,000 on a renovation on just one unit, the new kitchen, all that. I mean, you've really blown me away with $5,000.
I think it's with me, right? So it's probably also a very different, maybe demographic where you're doing your $30,000 one for, right? Like these units, like when we're talking $100,000 units, I'm getting revals on two bedders at 125. Like I don't have that margin to spend that much more, because when a valuer comes out, they're not going to give me that much more for Caesar stone bench tops over little laminate ones that we can just cut to size and pay $100 for a 2.4 meter sheet, you know, like there's ways of cutting costs on that lower end scale of renovation that really, like, you can really do them really, really low end. And I think I learned that from all the other ones I did, that just, I kept refining it and making them cheaper and cheaper every time I did them, but they still come out looking good, man. Like that's literally, it was brand new kitchen, like brand new, you know, cupboards and bench tops, sink, all that sort of stuff. So it's definitely doable. You just got to, and don't get emotional about it.
Just go the cheapest, get it all done, you know, keep the cost down and then just bang it through. Now, that's amazing. So after, say, getting it from revalued to, say, 125K, what kind of demographics did you attract and what kind of tenant did you get in there?
A lot of it was just singles, singles or young couples were just coming in and renting those out. So the very front one that the old lady was in last time, because that one was, so as it went back, as the building went back, the driveway dropped off a little bit. So they were up on, I don't know, like the back ones were probably up a good half a meter maybe from the ground, but it meant the front one was on ground level. So as soon as that was finished, because it was fully renovated, there was a local, like a disability company that came and put someone straight in that front one. So we pulled on the renovated units, we're pulling 195 on each of those. And then on the two bedders, and then on the big three bedder at the back renovated, we pulled 235 on that one as well.
Wow. So that's an exceptional return.
Yeah, we cleared 10%. I think we hit up around about 10.5% plus the depreciation with all that stuff being brand new as well.
Wow. So since then, how much has the whole set been revalued at?
The two bedders all came back at 125 a pop. So I had 375 between those, and then the three bedder at the back, because it was bigger and it had a lot of, you know, good stuff to go with it as well. That one came in at 140 on the reval for that one too. So there's a decent little chunk that came in there. I think it came in at 515 as a total it was about 400K all up to just over 400K all up to do the deal.
Gosh, okay. So that is quite a substantial amount of equity that you just gained from that. And that pretty much gave you almost, well, it didn't cost you almost nothing when you think about it, because that's paid itself off already, you know, especially when it's positive cash flow.
Well, the beautiful part of it, Tyrone, was what I did was I walked into that, because they were already individually titled, but I bought them in one line. I was able to refinance them out individually and kind of pull all my capital out of each deal as well. So I really, it really did cost me just about nothing to walk away from those things, pull all that capital, and was funnily enough able to roll it into the next one as well.
If you learned a lot from the episode, stay tuned for future episodes where Sam Gordon and I'll continue to share with you more property stories from his own journey. In the meantime, I've asked Sam to give us a free 30-minute strategy session to help you put together an actionable property plan to help you build your portfolio just like him. To get your free strategy session, simply visit australianpropertyscout.com.au and fill out the contact form. Or you can text 0499881040 and quote APS. Thanks for listening.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.